We begin the current daf mitzach diksubes daf kov base. Begin on the bottom of daf kov aleph on the base, two lines up on the bottom of the amud, where the Gemara continues the discussion from the previous daf. And that is, we began the new parak. Then the Gemara introduced, starting off with the machlegis amirom, and the reason for that is as our Gemara will continue, it asks on one of the opinions from our Mishnah. That is, the Gemara quoted machlegis Rabbi Yechon and Rish Lakish regarding if someone tells his friend, look, I owe you a mana. So the Gemara explained, obviously if he told the people around him that were listening to the conversation, you should be my witnesses that I owe him the money, of course he's going to owe him the money. If he didn't, then essentially he would be exempt. So what's the case that they argue about? It's talking about where he wrote in the document, I so-and-so owe you money, and this is what he didn't say it orally but written, and he gave that over in front of other people. Now that the machlekes was is that Rabbi Yechanan held that you're obligated because of what he calls alima milsa d'shtara. There's strength given to the document since you gave that over to the other person that I owe you in front of other people. That's as if he admitted in front of the other witnesses that the mesira was done, that he owes him money. So just like if someone would say to other people, you're my witnesses, he'd be chayv soto in this case. But Rish Lakish says that no, he's exempt because he never told anybody, it doesn't happen this on this document that he owes the money with witnesses that signed on it. And he didn't tell anybody, you're my witnesses. So although he gave over in writing this piece of paper, albeit in front of other people, he's still going to be exempt. Now that's where our Gemara continues and says, Tanan, a difficulty on Rish Lakish's opinion from our Mishnah. We learned that Hanoisei Seisha, if someone marries a woman, Upaska imoi lozen es bito chamashana. From the prenuptials, she made up that she has a daughter from a different marriage, and she needs someone to take care of her. So although she's getting married, her husband's going to take care of her, but she wants him to guarantee that he's going to provide sustenance for her daughter for 5 years. So on that, the Mishnah says, Chayv lozen chamashanam. So they made up that he's going to feed her for 5 years, so then he has to feed her for 5 years. On that, the Gemara asks, "My love, ki hai gavna, what's the Mishnah talking about? Isn't it talking about the same type of case that we're discussing? That's the Machlokes Rish Lakish and Rabbi Yechanan. In other words, because when this girl comes at a later point in time, what type of testimony, proof does she have that her stepfather has to feed her for the 5 years? Isn't it talking about this same type of a case where this man getting married to this woman gave over her a document?" Okay, I'm going to feed your daughter for 5 years. And he gave this over in front of other witnesses. And he wrote on it that I'm accepting responsibility. But there was no kinyan, there was no acquisition on the obligation. Neither were there even signatures of witnesses on this document that he was saying that I'm going to feed your daughter for 5 years. And yet in spite of that, we see from the Mishnah, like Rish Lakish, that the man will have to feed the daughter for 5 years. And the reason being is because like Rashi explains, if it was talking about a regular document that he had with witnesses signed in it, that he's going to have to feed the daughter for 5 years. So of course, why would the Mishnah have to say that he has to feed? Of course, if you wrote a document with witnesses signing that you're obligating yourself, and there's a kinyan over here, or with witnesses that you're going to be obligated, of course you're going to be obligated. Must be the Mishnah is saying that even if there were no witnesses on the document, and there was no kinyan, in spite of that, just by writing, I'm going to feed your daughter 5 years, that is, makes a person obligated, seemingly like Rabbi Yechanan, when you write that I owe you money, even if you don't have witnesses signed on it, but it was given in front of witnesses, that will make a person obligated, not like Rish Lakish. So I think Gemara continues the top of Kuf Beis and Bedam says, no, it's not a difficulty to Rish Lakish. Because we're talking about Bishtari Pisikta. We're talking about a document that's used between the bride and the groom when they're Pisik, when they agree to what's called a Tnoyim, to conditions between them, meaning that's done in front of witnesses. And the witnesses sign a full-fledged witness's signature. Now, that the question is, so then what would be the necessity of saying this halacha? Of course, if people, when they get married, they make a tnayim. In this case, you say in the case of our Mishnah, where when he's getting married to this woman who has a daughter, and he says, okay, I'll feed her for 5 years, so that this is a regular full-fledged document, so what's the need to say that he's going to have to feed her 5 years if it's not like the case that was proving for a b'yechon and not like Rish Lakish? So I think Mark explains there is a chiddush over here. Because we're talking about that there's no kinyan. There's only words. So although this witness is signed in this document, so it's a shtar psikta, it's not like the case that was Rabbi Yechon Rish Lakish Toma where there was no witness signed at all, but there was no acquisition of obligations. As the Gemara explains, Ukadrav Gidl, that he says that when you're doing the shtar psikta by the Tanaim, You don't have to make an actual kinyan, an acquisition, which generally, to become liable or obligated in something, you have to make a kinyan. Here you don't have to. Damar Rav Gidl Marav, like Rav Gidl said, the name of Rav. He says that when it comes time for the Tznayim, where they make these prenuptial agreements between them before they get married, the Chas and Kala, so the in-laws, the parents, the Mechotanim, say to each other, "Come out and listen, Levincha. How much money are you going to give for the upcoming marriage for your son?" So he says, "That's how much I'm going to give." And he says to the other one, "Come out and listen, Levincha. How much are you going to give for your daughter?" So he says, "Kach v'kach, I'm going to give that much." Amdu v'kitru, they then get up and they get engaged. Kanu, then they have acquired each other's obligations. And heinen advar manikir mamir, and these are the elements that could create an acquisition just with words, just with a verbal agreement. And therefore, that's the chiddush of our Mishnah. So although you have a document that's testifying to what happened, so you have witnesses inside of there, so then if that's the case, of course, if you have a document with witnesses, what's the chiddush? The chiddush is because, yes, just having witnesses sign, what are they signing? They're signing to a verification that this is what happened. But what happened? Just a verbal agreement between two people. They didn't make an acquisition. They didn't take like his hat off or a sudr, a kerchief, and make a kinyan. They just said it verbally. And that's the chiddush that Rav Gidl says, that you don't need to have a kinyan when it comes to the tznayim. It's good enough b'amira. That's the chiddush that since he verbally agreed to that, he's going to have to feed that daughter for 5 years. But not to disprove a shlokish. If, let's say, it wasn't a tznayim, it wasn't, for example, that it didn't have witnesses signed on it, then Rish Lakish, then Rish Lakish would agree, as he argues in the previous daf, that then that wouldn't be mechayiv, something that wouldn't make a person obligated. So the Gemara continues, Tashima, again trying to prove, like Rabbi Yechanan, not like Rish Lakish, that if someone even just writes something on the document and no witness signed on it and there's no kinyan, but it's given over in front of witnesses, that then that would obligate the person himself. As we learn in the Mishnah Masechtas Becharis, the Mishnah says, "Kasav l'kain." If a person writes to a kain on a document, "Shani chayev l'cha chamish sloim," I owe you. This is an IOU, 5 sloim, which is the same amount, which is the halacha of penya ben, the redemption of the firstborn son, which you have to give to the kain, 5 sloim. So if a person writes to a kain, "I owe you 5 sloim," so chayev litin loy chamish sloim. So he has to give him 5 sloim. Now, as Tais explains, in the Havmin of the Gemara originally assumes that this that the Mishnah is saying that he's obligated is because he obligates himself and because he became indebted through this document that he's writing to the Kohen. Now, therefore, the Mishnah says, Uvenoi in the Padui. His son is not redeemed because the 5 sloim that he's obligating himself is because he's writing a document. Nothing to do with the fact that he has a firstborn son that he has to redeem. So, although he's obligating himself and he's going to have to give 5 sloim, that's for him obligating himself, but that is not redeeming his son. So, David the Gemara asks, we see like Rabbi Yechanan, not like Rish Lakish, person just wrote an IOU, no witnesses, no nothing, and we see he could obligate himself for 5 sloim. And because it's not a fulfillment of the Pinya Ben, because you see his son is not redeemed. So, that the Gemara says, no, Shani Hoss, in that case is different. The Meshubed Le Midai Raisa. Because actually, there is already an existing obligation on this person of the firstborn son, biblically, to give the Kohen 5 sloim. Now that is why, as Tais explains, here he could obligate himself through the document. And even though that's not going to be a fulfillment of the mitzvah Penya Ben, because there is already an existing Shibud of Penya Ben. But like Tais says, that if there is no existing Shibud, so then you're right, it wouldn't be difficult like Rish Lakish. Rish Lakish would agree, that's his opinion, that then you cannot be meshabed yourself, you cannot make yourself obligated in the document. There it's different because there's already an existing shibud, so then you could still be meshabed yourself for another 5 sloim in just by writing itself. Now that the Gemara asks, ihachi. But if you're saying that there's already a shibud midaraisa, samai kasav, why is he writing then? What's the point of saying IOU? He already owes the kain biblically from the Shibud of Pinya Ben. So that the Gemara answers, Kedei Levar LeKayin, because he's selecting a Kayin. Meaning you have to give to any Kayin, not necessarily to this Kayin, so that he's not going to give to any other Kayin. That's why he's writing, I owe you, and you're going to get the 5 sloim, not another Kayin. But then the Gemara asks, Ihachi, if the reason why you're explaining that it's not difficult according to Rish Lakish, and that he can be Mechayim himself just with writing, is because there's already a Shibud, there's already a biblical obligation to give this kayin. So then it's like witnesses have testified and have signed in the document itself, which normally we would not say, like Rish Lakish explains. Here it's different because the Shiba Deraisa. So then, Benoya Mayenu Padoi. Why, if you're saying, could he obligate himself? Because there's a Shibud Deraisa, and that's what it's depending on. So if it's writing on that Shibud, well, that Shibud then should be a fulfillment when you write that document. And then, when you give him that five slum, should fulfill the redemption of the firstborn son. Why is that not going to be a redemption of the firstborn son? So that the Gemara answers Kedu Ula. Like Ula says, Dama Ula, the Ula says, Divad Toh, you're right. Biblically, Padoi Likashayitin. The son should be redeemed when he gives the five slum in connection with this document that he wrote that I owe you. But in my time, Amr Benoi in the Padoi, so why do they say in the Mishnah Masechta Bechori that his son is not redeemed? The reason is because it's a gezerah. It's a concern. There's a rabbinic decree. When he gives his own document of indebtedness to the Kayin, that we said that when he gives those five slum, that cannot fulfill the obligation of the five slum of Pinya Ben. Because maybe people are going to come to say that you could redeem a firstborn son, Bishtaris, with documents. Now, what type of documents are we concerned about? When he has an IOU of someone else owes him money, which has monetary value. And if he gives that deed to a Kayin, which is worth five slum to redeem his first son, people are going to say, wait a second. I once saw a man give a Kayin a shtar, which is when his own indebtedness, which that should work, because that's like an IOU, it's like giving someone money. And they're going to say, what's the difference between this other document, which is when someone else owes him money? Now, however, we learned in the Mishnah of Sefetz B'chayrus that a person cannot redeem his son, not with a slave, if he gives a slave to a Kayin, neither with shtaris documents, which is third-party documents, or with land. And the Gemara there learns it out from Pesukim. So because of that, we said that even when the guy gives his own shtar and he fulfills his redemption that way, that will not work because we're concerned that he might use a different shtar and that people are going to confuse the two, and that doesn't work. Now the Gemara says, Amar Rava, says that this machleik is Rabbi Yochanan Shlokish that we're discussing, which was quoted on the previous daf, regarding again if someone writes in the document, I owe you, without any witnesses, without any kinyanim, if that's going to obligate him or not. Actually, it's ketanoi. It seems like that's a machlekes tanoi m'sachtes baba basra. The Mishnah says, "Arav hayetze achar chisim shtaris," regarding a guarantor that signed, meaning that wrote his obligation as a guarantor after the signing of the witness's signature on the document. He wrote underneath that he says that I am the guarantor for this loan, and he admits that yes, he was the guarantor and he's going to guarantee it. So on that, the Mishnah says, Goiva, so the lender could collect from the available properties of the guarantor himself, but not from his nechasim shebadim. Meaning if, let's say, after the time of the loan, he had sold different properties, and now he doesn't have anything to fulfill his guarantee of the loan, the lender cannot go collect it from nechasim shebadim. The reason being is because since he only wrote as his guarantee after the signatures of the document, essentially his agreement is like a milva al peh. That element of the loan is oral, because the way it becomes a milva bishtar is when you have witnesses signed on it. Now the witness's signature is not going on his statement that I'm the guarantor, because that was written after the witness's signature. So therefore it could be collected only from the chasim necharin of the arv and not in the chasim shabadim. So to the Mishnah brings Maisabul of Neir Bishmol of Omar that gave him Nechasim Necharin, you could only collect from the available properties of the Arab and not Nechasim Meshabad. Now on that, Amalei Benana, so Benana said to Rabbi Shmol, who said the same thing like the Tanakama, says actually, in a gaiva, the lender cannot collect Loim Nechasim Necharin, but Loim Nechasim Meshabad. Not from the available properties and not from the indebted properties of the Arab. So Amalei, so Rabbi Shmol said to Benana, Slama, why? What do you mean? At least he was machayiv himself, so therefore he could collect from his nechasim necharin. So Amalei Sabinana said to Rabbi Shmuel, I said, no. Imagine, he says, picture, if somebody was choking another person in the marketplace, and his friend comes and sees somebody's choking him, and he tells him, leave him alone, I'll give you what he owes you. Obviously, that person would be exempt from actually paying. Shaloi al emunasei halveyu, because it's not because of the faithfulness of this one who's giving the guarantee did the person originally lend the money. It's only now when he's coming to collect, where the person that just wants to save the person, he says, oh, don't worry, leave him alone, I'll pay it up. And essentially what he's saying is that the person was never mechayev himself as an arif for the loan. It was only later that he said, don't worry, I'm going to pay it up. That's not valid for the halachas of Arevis. So to over here, where since there was the witness's signature, that is the completion of the loan. When he puts his writing, and I'm the guarantor after that, that's already post the loan. That will not be mechayev him, not only for nechasim mishabadim, and not even from nechasim nechar. That's machlekes. So that the Gemara says, Lema, let's say that this is the same machlekes Rabbi Yechon Rish Lakish. Rabbi Yechon and the Amar Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yechon seemingly is like Rabbi Shmuel and the Tanakama, who they said that just writing something, even if it's not with the witness's signature, which is what a regular document is usually like, because here everyone agrees that since it was written after the witness's signature, it's not Kemilva Bishtar. Now, however, but still, Rabbi Shmuel holds that he could be mechayv himself at least for nechasim necharin. That sounds like Rabbi Yechon, who says that if someone writes just his own writing in the document, I owe you a mana, he'll become obligated in that mana. Rish Lakish damake benanas. Rish Lakish sounds like he says like benanas, who benanas says that no, it doesn't work at all. And that's like Rish Lakish says, if you just write on a piece of paper, I owe you, it has no validity whatsoever. So seemingly the machlekes are machlekes tanoim. So nothing more says no. Aliba de menanas kula amaloi pliki. According to Benanas, nobody's going to argue. In other words, this that you said that Rabbi Yechanan is like Rabbi Shmuel and not like Benanas, that's because Rabbi Yechanan agrees that according to Benanas, you will be pater. In other words, even though Rabbi Yechanan's opinion was that you'll be chayiv when you write in the document, I owe you a mana, he agrees that according to Benanas that you would be pater. Because if by the case of Ariv, by guarantor, where they were talking about a biblical shibud, as Rashi brings, is a biblical pasuk that speaks about Arevis becoming obligated as the Arev even without a kinyan, without the chasimis of Edom. As the pasuk says, Yehuda tells to Yaakov, Anoichi Arveno, I will be the Arev, I will be the guarantor. So therefore, and still Benanas says, when there's no witnesses on it, then the Arev is going to be examined. So for sure, Benanas would hold. Regarding the case that he argues with Rish Lakish, regarding someone just admitting that I owe you a mana, for sure he's going to be exempt because that's creating a new chiv, where an arv is already on the old chiv, and even there, where it's a shibud d'oraisa, he holds you're going to be exempt. For sure he's going to hold it, you're going to be exempt in this case that he argues with Rish Lakish. However, as Gemara continues in Talmud Beis, ki paligi alibud Rabbi Shmuel, that however, but they would argue in the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel. In other words, this that you said that Rish Lakish is like Benanis and not like Rabbi Shmuel, that's not true. Because Rabbi Yechanan, Rabbi Shmuel, you're right. Rabbi Yechanan obviously is going like an opinion of Rabbi Shmuel, that he holds that you could be mechayev yourself even without witnesses, so too is Rabbi Yechanan. But Rish Lakish would tell you that I could be even like Rabbi Shmuel and argue on Rabbi Yechanan. Because Ad can look come Rabbi Shmuel Hassan, because where do we find Rabbi Shmuel over there in the case of Ariv, that it helps to write and obligate yourself as a guarantor even without witnesses, because the witnesses were written before on the document and doesn't go on his arivus. That's El Deshaich Lele Shibud D'Oraisa, says, because it only pertains to a biblical shibud, which is there already. And therefore, since there's already a halvo over here, and he could attach himself to what's already a shibud, which we're saying arivus is a biblical shibud, so that's where Rabbi Shmuel says that he'll be chayv without edim. Aval hacha, but over here where someone just writes on a piece of paper, I owe you, l'shayach shibud d'oraisa, that doesn't pertain to a biblical shibud, and that's why Rish Lakish would hold that even Rabbi Shmuel would agree to me that you're not going to be chayv. So therefore, Rish Lakish doesn't have to be like Benanis, he could be like Benanis, and he could be like Rabbi Shmuel. Now the Gemara continues with what mentioned on the top of the of Amr Aleph, which was mentioned because of the question posed on Rish Lakish from our Mishnah, where it seemed like a person could be mechayev himself to feed the stepdaughter for 5 years just by writing. And that the Gemara says that, no, that's going like Rabbi Gidla Marav, who is so much star b'sikta, where there are witnesses signed in it. And again, the chiddush of that was because even though there's no kinya, there's no actual acquisition, however, that those are things that are niknam ba'amir. So the Gemara quotes this now, gufa, we learned, Amar Rabbi Gidla Marav, kam ato nois leventcha. The One of the mechatanim says to the other one, how much are you going to give for your son? So he says, kach v'kach, that much amount of money. And the other one says, v'kamat v'nes l'bitch, how much are you going to give for your daughter? He says, kach v'kach, so much. Undo the kitchen, then they get up and they get engaged. Kanu, they have acquired each other's obligations for the upcoming marriage. And that's because heinen advar maniknum amir, these are the things which are unique that they can make a kinyan acquisition just by verbal agreement. Now, Amar Rava, Rava explains this halacha. He says, Mistaber Milsa de Rav, it's logical to say that this halacha of Rav is Toma Bebikti Nara, when someone is marrying off his daughter that's a Nara between the ages of 12 and 12 and a half. Why? To Kamati Hanoli Yodi, that's because the father is getting pleasure from this marriage, because the Kesef Kedushin, the money of the Kedushin, goes to her father when she's still a Nara. Now, it makes sense to say that through that pleasure, that then obligates him in this verbal agreement that he made for the upcoming marriage, what he's going to give to the groom's side. And that's how you could obligate yourself in that Hana. Aval Begeres, but it would make sense that if he's marrying off his daughter that's older than that, Dilimata Hana Liyadi, where he doesn't even get the Kesef Kedushin, that Lai. Then he would not be able to obligate himself with words, because what is he getting for that obligation? There's nothing for it to be chal on, to make that transfer of benefit for obligation. But on that, Rava says, Volikim, which is a term of an oath, Amar Rav, Rav said this halacha fila begeres, even if he's marrying of his daughter that's older. And he explains, because if you wouldn't say like what I'm saying, Menavi HaBen, the father of the chasen of the groom, what pleasure did he get? How can he obligate himself from the groom's side? He doesn't get any kesef kedushin. It's the pleasure that he has that he's marrying with a child. So then he concludes and he makes the acquisition on that pleasure, and therefore that would apply even to someone that's marrying of his daughter that's older, that pleasure of marrying of a daughter, even though he's not getting the actual pleasure of monetary concept. Now the Gemara asks a question related to this. Amalei Ravin Ravashi. It says, Dvarm halolu. These words, which is the concept of psikta, which is that the groom side and the bride side agree to certain terms for the upcoming marriage, how much are they obligating himself? So the question is, nitnu likasev, are these verbal agreements, which will be kaina, just with amira, can they be written down in the document? In other words, if they want witnesses to sign what they agreed upon, with these things that didn't have an actual kinyan, because we said they were just verbally agreed upon, which obligates the person. But could it be written in a document? Or could they not be written down in a document? Hence, if it's not written in the document, these obligations cannot be collected from the Chasim Mishabadim, because the Chasim Mishabadim could only be from a shtar with witnesses on it. Now, the reason for this option of saying that it cannot be written down is because since there's no actual acquisition done, so the nechasim of the person who's obligating himself are not mishubed. You're right, the person himself becomes obligated because these are things that are niknam amira. But the question is, how much of a kinyan is it with a non-kinyan? Is it even that the person's nechasim, his assets, become obligated, hence it could be written and signed with witnesses to be collected from mishubadim, or not? Some alay, so Rav Ashi responded, this says, Leinan Likasa. No, it cannot be written down because you didn't really make an actual kinyan to make the assets obligated. And therefore, you can't write it because you're not allowed to collect from the Chasim Mishabadim. Now, that the Gemara says, we learned in our Mishnah, said, Hapikhan Hoyukaisan, it says that the smart men would write to the woman that they're marrying who has a daughter that she wants them to guarantee he's going to feed her for 5 years. Now, as we explained on top of Amen Alf, that we're talking about a shtar psikta, like Rav Gidl Abba Rav. And we said that's the case, so that doesn't contradict Halacha B'Rish Lakish. So it says that the smart man would write, Amanash Sha'aznes Bitcho Chameshanam, you write, on the condition that I feed your daughter 5 years, Kozman Sha'atimi, as long as you're with me. So therefore, if she leaves, then he's not going to have to go ahead and still feed the daughter when they're not married anymore. But be that as it may, the Gemara is asking that you see that this shtar psikta, which is what the Gemara explains, is what the case of the Mishnah is talking about, was kaisvin, that they would write it down. But Rav Ashi just said, you can't write it down. So the Gemara says, my kaisvin, what does it mean when it says they would write this? It means they would say this. They would say, it's only as long as you're with me, but then not that it was written. So the Gemara asks, v'karli l'amir k'siva? What do you mean? The Mishnah calls saying with the words writing? So Gemara says, and yes, we find such a precedent. But it's not like we learn the Mishnah Peri Gimel Amid Aleph. The Mishnah says, HaKaisav Le'ishter, someone writes to his wife, Din Udvarim Ein Libin Nechsayich, that I have no litigation in regards to your assets, which means to say that he gets to eat the peiris of a Nechsib Lug. So the halacha there, it says that he will eat the peiris when she's still alive. Now, but Betan Reb Chi, when he explains the halacha of that Mishnah, he says it's Ho'oim Le'ishter, I mean someone that says to his wife, you don't have to write it. So you see such a precedent where, although it's a reference to verbal, it could use the term of writing. So David, the Gemara continues. Toshima. Let's bring a raya from the Mishnah Baba Basra. Mishnah Baba Basra says, "In kaisin shtari erisin v'nisuin." A person cannot write a document of engagement, which the Gemara will momentarily explain, and v'nisuin, when marriages, which is the document of ksuba, elam adashneim, has to be with the understanding of both the bride and the groom. Now, on that, the Gemara asks, "Hamidash neim kaisin." Sounds like, but if both the chasn and the kala agree, then it could be written my lab. What does shtar erisin mean? Shtar nisuin, we know it means ksuba. What is a document written when they get engaged? Shtar psikta. That's the document of the prenuptial agreements that they have before they get engaged. What they're going to guarantee each other's side, and still we see that if they both agree, they could write it. So you see that it could be written not like Rav Ashi. So the Gemara says, "Loi, no." Shtari erisin mamish, it means literally the document of engagement, meaning the document that he gets engaged to the woman, he writes on the document. Hare ad mekudeshesli, and he gives over that document to the woman. Now, so what's the chiddush that if they agree to that, that you could write? Of course, that's one of the ways of being mekadesh isha, which is bishtar. The chiddush of that is that you have to write it with her agreement first. And that is kedra papa versh ravya, like those two amirum that they say, that if the shtar kedushin was written without her knowing, then it's not going to be a valid kedushin. Didma, like we learned, it's actually machloikis. Kasvu lishma v'shalim edaita. If let's say the shtar kedushin was written for this woman, which is what's called lishma, but without her knowing about it, so Rabba v'ravina amir mekadeshes, they say it's a good kedushin. Rabba v'ravshavi amir, they say einim mekadeshes, not mekadeshes, has to be only with her knowledge. That's the chiddush that Mishnah Baba Basra is saying, that you can't write the shtar erisin if it's not midashneim. But if it is midashneim, then you could. Again, not the shtar psikta, because the shtar psikta cannot be written, which is the conditions that they have, but rather it's a reference to the shtar erisin itself. So the Gemara continues trying to bring a raya. Toshma, we learned in our Mishnah, said that Mesu, if these stepfathers die, meaning when she married one person already with this daughter in tow, and he obligated himself, and then went to another husband, and he obligated himself, and then they died. So B'nai Sein, their own daughters that they had, let's say, with this woman or not, Nizaynis min nechasa B'nai Chayrin, they only get fed from the available assets that he still has in his possession. But V'hi, Nizaynis min nechasa Mishabadim, this stepdaughter, she's even better than the regular daughters. She gets fed from encumbered properties. The reason is, when she kabbalah slave, because she is like a creditor. Now, on that Rashi explains, the Gemara's question is, if she's not holding a shtar pesikta, how could she collect from Mishabadim? She's just like anybody else that has conditions attached. Just like ksubas, just like in the ksubas is written that the daughters will get fed after he dies, so too she has a condition, must be she has a document. What document? The shtar pesikta, which says that he has to feed her for 5 years, and that's why she's like a baal schev that could collect from the chasam mishabadim. So you see that a shtar psikta could be written. So that the Gemara says no. Hachem ha'iskina, what we're talking about over here, the reason why she could collect is because b'shekanu miyadai, where the mother, when she got married to the husband, made a kinyan from him to obligate him in feeding her daughter for 5 years. Because of that, that's why she could even collect from the Chasam Mishabadim. But not because you could write down the Shtar Pesikta, and that is what is Mechayiv to even collect from the Chasam Mishabadim. So the Gemara asks, Ihach, if that's the case, so Bandes Nami. So then even daughters which are from him, not just that was only from her, which he's specifically obligating himself, should also be able to collect from the Chasam Mishabadim, because the mother made a kinyan that the husband's going to obligate himself. So then the Gemara answers, no, b'shekanu lezu, b'lekanu lezu. He only obligated himself in the stepdaughter, the daughter that she already had, but not for the future daughters that they're going to have from their union moving forward. So the Gemara asks, my paska. The Gemara asks, where did you see fit why would there be a differentiation for the Chachamim regarding the daughter that was only the daughter of the woman, and that he's not going to obligate himself for the daughters that he has together with her? Because we said in the Mishnah that we just quoted, his daughters get fed only from the Chasam Neichar. However, she collects from the Chasam Shabbatim. Why does our Mishnah say that differentiation? Why would it say, as in the general halacha, as if a man will always only obligate himself in the Kenyan on his stepdaughter, but not his own daughters? So the Gemara explains the logic. You're right. Even if the husband's obligating himself, plain, he says, okay, you know what? Don't worry. You can make a kinyan from me. I'm going to be obligated to feed your daughters, which would include not only the stepdaughter, but even the daughters from himself. But regarding the stepdaughter that was alive, she's coming in from a previous marriage. She was there at the time when the husband makes a kinyan to her mother. So therefore the kinyan works for her, and therefore she could collect from the chasam shabbatim. But his own daughters that he's going to end up having from this woman, from their union now, which they're not there at the time of the kinyan, so for them the kinyan doesn't work because they're not in the oilum yet, they're not here, that the kinyan could be chal for them. Now that the Gemara asked. Now, are you saying that it's not possible to ever have that the daughters that he has from her, that they could be around at the time that he is making the kinyan? But on that the Gemara asks, Mila is kinyan, hab b'shas kinyan? Aren't we talking about that it could even be that his own daughters are there when he's making the kinyan? Now, v'hechadim, how could that be? Could go in the girsha v'hadra. That, for example, if let's say he had daughters from her, then he divorced her, then he remarried her, and then he writes those tenoyim, those conditions, when he's remarrying her. And even so, the Mishnah says plain, his own daughters only collect from the Chasam B'nei Chayrin, but their stepdaughter collects from the Chasam Shabbatim. Why? What should be the difference? So El Rav, the Gemara says the difference is, Ihi, the lesser B'nai Bezdin. This stepdaughter, who's not included in the condition of Bezdin, which is written into the Ksuba, which every husband obligates himself, B'nan Nukvin, your female daughters, the Havin Lichi Minoi, that you will have from me, that he writes in the Ksuba, then I'm going to have to feed them after he passes away. Now, her, she's not included in that because that daughter was not from him. So, Mahani Lo Kenyan. For her, therefore, the Kenyan that he's obligating himself works for. But his own daughters that are already included in the Tznai Bezdin, that he's going to have to feed them anyway, Mahani Lo Kenyan, so therefore the Kenyan doesn't work for them because they already have their obligation from the Tanai Ksuba of Benon Nukvin, and therefore they could only collect from the Chasam Necharin as the Ksuba of Benon Nukvin allows, but not from the Chasam Meshabadim. Tosh Gemara asks, why? Migri? Does that make them worse? Because they already have one obligation, so you can't have a second insurance? What's the difference? If he made a kinyan, so that should obligate himself and also Benon Nukvin, and hence they should also be allowed to collect from the Chasam Meshabadim. El Rav, the Gemara concludes, Benoise of Hain the time, and the reason why his own daughters cannot collect from the Chasam Meshabadim, only from the Chasam Necharin, is because Kivin the Isnu B'tnai Bezin, since he's already obligated to feed them from a condition from the Bezin, which is written to every Ksuba, so Ema would say, Tzrori Atfasinu. And we would say that before he died, he gave them over bundles of money for their Mezainis, because he knows this is an obligation of the courts which he has to fulfill. And therefore we say that, okay, so we're concerned for the buyers that they cannot collect from the Chasam Meshabadim because maybe he already gave them because he knows from the Tznai Bezin. Whereas by his wife's daughter with you, there is no such element of Trari Atfasinu, there is no Tznai Bezin requiring him to feed her. Therefore, when he's Mechayiv himself, that is something that's going to be that he's not going to give a Trari Atfasinu, and hence, by her, she could collect from the Chasam Meshabadim. Therefore, although his daughters also should be, but since there's the added element of Ksub has been a nikvan, we're concerned that actually that's why he gave them already, his own daughters, the bundles of money, and therefore, because of that concern, although they could collect from the Chasam Necharin, they cannot collect from the Chasam Meshabadim. And therefore, the Gemara concludes that the reason why the father is obligated to feed this daughter for 5 years is because of the Shekhan Meyadai, not because of the Shtar Psik that was written down, and therefore that's not a refutation, and the opinion of Rav Ashi still stands. That although you could write a Shtar B'sikta, that although you could have a Shtar B'sikta and you can make it could be a Kenyan, but you can't write it down, therefore not allowing to collect from the Chasam Meshabadim. Now, the Mishnah continued, it said, Lo Yoyma Harishan, that if let's say the woman got married to a man who made the condition, I'm going to feed your daughter for 5 years, then she went and left him, got married to another man. So on that, the Mishnah says that the first husband cannot say, wait a second, well, if you would be living with me, then I would feed your daughter for the 5 years, because that's what I agreed to. But we were only married for a year or whatever it is, and therefore I'm not going to feed her. On that, the Mishnah says that no, rather he has to go ahead, since he obligated himself for 5 years of sustenance for the daughter, even if the mother left him already, so that he has to go ahead and send the food to where the mother is. Now, on that, Amar Rav Chisda, he says, Zoyse Meres. What we could infer from the terminology of the Mishnah, which said that a person has to go ahead and bring it lamakam she'ima, send the food that he's obligated to feed the daughter to where the mother is, and it didn't say labeis achiha, to the where her brothers are. So we could learn that that's actually what the halacha is, and that is because the she should grow up of bas etzel ima, that the daughter should grow up where her mother is, and although the daughter is getting sustenance from the sons, they have to feed her where her mother lives, and they can't force her to live with them. And although sometimes it can be cheaper to provide for someone that way, it doesn't make a difference. Now, on that, the Gemara asks, now, from where do we know that a Mishnah is talking about an adult girl, and still we're saying that she should grow up where her mother is, and that's why it says that they should send it to where the mother is? Maybe we're talking about a minor, and that's why it doesn't say that you have to send it to where the daughter is, where the brothers are. Now, why would it be a difference between a minor and an adult? Like there was a following incident, the time like learned the Braisa. If someone dies and he leaves over a young boy who to his mother, meaning because the father passed away, so the inheritors of the father say, we want him to grow up with us. But the mother says, no, I want him to grow up with me. So the halacha is manichin oisel etzel ima. We leave him by his mother. Ve'imanichin oisel etzel ro liyarsha. We don't leave him to live together with those who are fit to inherit him, which are the other brothers, if one of the brothers would die. And the reason is because maisa haya, there was actually an incident that happened. V'shachtuhu, and the girsa is ayin reish hay, where there's a few different interpretations, if that stands for Erev Harishon, the first evening already, or Erev HaPesach. But be that as it may, we see that they murdered him because of the inheritance that now they're going to inherit instead of him. Now, therefore, the same thing should apply over here by a minor girl. Maybe they're going to kill her. Why? Because a minor girl can get up to 1/10 of the estate for parnasa when she's getting married to her new husband. So because of that, maybe that's why we say that you should send the sustenance to where the mother is, because she should stay with her mother, not with her brothers who might kill her. But by an adult woman, where we don't have to be concerned that they're going to murder her, she could protect herself. So we should say that she should live with her brothers and not with the mother. How could we make the deek that she should always be with the mother? Maybe that's only by a minor where we're concerned for murder and not for a case of an adult. So that thing says, no, to answer for Rav Chisda, Im Kain, if there was a differentiation between an adult and a minor, so listen, Ilohakim Shehi, the Mishnah should just have said that they send the sustenance wherever she is. Where it would sound like an adult where she is, which you're trying to say is by the brother, and the minor where she is, which everyone would agree would be with the mother, that she doesn't get murdered. However, as we continue the tab of Kof Gimel and Aleph, my lamakim she'ima, so why does it say a general statement that it's sent to where the mother is? So shamat mino, we could infer from there that every bas etzla aim, every daughter goes to live with the mother, leishna gadoi lo veleishna katana. It doesn't make a difference if she's an adult or a minor, we're always going to have the daughter growing up by the mother, and still the brothers have to go ahead and feed her the base ima, even though they're not, she's not living with them.